It's not enough to keep going on all these sites saying, buy my book, buy my book, buy my book. You have to give them something for it. They want to know what's in it for me.
Welcome to episode 76 of the Frank Online Marketing Show. My name is Temma Frank and I'm your host. Internet marketing is one of those fields where there are definite fads that happen, especially if you follow some of the internet marketing gurus. You'll find that they go through little trends where you'll get emails about one topic from a whole bunch of them all within the space of a few weeks. So a few months ago, it was guest blogging that was all the rage, and everyone was talking about guest blogging and offering programs on how you could do guest blogging. And there's no question, guest blogging is a really important thing, but it's just that it hit the news all at once. Last year's trend was Kindle publishing on Amazon, and same thing. Everybody was writing about it, everybody was talking about it. And to be honest, a lot of people were abusing it, with the result that Amazon really toughened up on a lot of their rules. So for instance, it's not so easy to just put up free books on Amazon, or really, often it was just free little pamphlets that people were calling books, and using that as a way to market yourself. They're trying to up the quality standards a little. Well, today's guest, Brenda Collins, is a former six-figure information security executive who a few years ago walked away from that to pursue her childhood dream of writing commercial fiction. I'm personally more of a literary fiction gal, but I totally admire how Brenda has used her business background to kickstart a really successful writing career. It's so exciting to see how she's doing it. And she, unlike some of those marketing gurus, she's really been in the trenches learning about Amazon, what works, what doesn't, and you'll find a lot of fantastic advice in this interview. Even if you don't plan to write and publish a book on Amazon, you will still find that a lot of what she has to say is good, solid business sense that will apply to really any kind of business. So again, I think it's worth listening to, even if you're not, like me, struggling to write a book. Brenda is originally from Newfoundland, and although we weren't drinking Screech at the time, I have to say this interview probably has more laughs per minute than any other interview I've done yet. She is a fun person, and you'll hear that in the interview. It's a long one again. I will chat with you very briefly at the end. Enjoy. I'm here today with my longtime friend and now published author, Brenda M. Collins, and Brenda has an interesting past and how she became a writer. When Brenda and I first met, it was, we don't even want to say how many decades ago.
Let's not go there.
And we were both working in the banking industry. We've both strayed pretty far from that now. But tell us your story, Brenda.
Let's see. Yes, we did. I did start my career, as Temma mentioned, in, I was more on the international banking side of things. And I worked more in the computer security end. And I traveled extensively, so I gathered a lot of stories under my belt during that 30-year career.
Ah, you told them.
Darn! It slipped! But after that length of time, I finally decided I was running out of time to pursue my dream, which was to become a commercial fiction writer. So I have been doing that now for, I guess, just a couple of years full-time. And I do technical writing of engineering reports just to make ends meet, as most writers have to. But my passion is commercial fiction, and I write cozy mysteries laced with a little romance. And I do some with a little bit of magic in them, so a little paranormal.
So you got a little bit of everything in there.
A little bit of everything. I'm still zeroing in on what I really want to do, but it's always going to be cozy mystery at its core.
And so what exactly is cozy mystery? What does that mean?
Cozy mystery, it really started with authors like Agatha Christie.
Okay.
So it's all about the puzzle. And you start off usually with some sort of a dead body was the original way. It came out, and then there was red herrings, and the reader generally is reading it because they want to beat the author in figuring out who done it.
Now, my audience may be wondering why I've invited a cozy romance or a cozy mystery writer onto the podcast. And the reason is Brenda, over the last couple of years, has been experimenting and learning a lot about publishing on Kindle in particular. And so
I'd like to talk to you, Brenda, a little bit about your experience with that. What are some of the things that people need to know? Because, of course, now you can get your message out much more easily. There's no longer the gatekeeper of a professional publishing house.
Traditionally, the big publishing houses would take the majority of the royalties, up to 95%. Mm-hmm. So the author could spend years writing their book. It would go through their agent or through an editor, be accepted by the large publishing houses, and then they would sign over almost all of the money to be earned on the basis that the traditional publishing houses would be fronting the marketing. They would provide the marketing expertise, all of the production, all of the distribution, and they said that cost them 95% of whatever the book would make.
Right, so a $20 book, they'd be lucky to get a dollar of it.
Exactly. So with the digital publishing, what has happened is Amazon predominantly, now there are others, and we can talk a little bit about that, but Amazon owns about 85% of the market, okay, or the market share. So let's, for ease of conversation, refer to Amazon. They actually have cornered about 85% of the market. And what they are offering to authors is if you write your book, you can actually publish it on Amazon and they provide the distribution. And what they take in return depends on your pricing model. So up to $2.99, so from, you know, zero, and you, now they don't allow any more for you to offer it for free for an extended period of time.
They don't allow that anymore.
No, okay. There are some exceptions to that, but just, you know, generally speaking, they don't want you to offer it for free. So up to 99 cents, they will give you 30% of the royalties, and they will take the 70%. And really, it's, yes, that's punitive. They don't want you to put a 99-cent book
right
on their system because it's clogged.
Sure.
They've got, I haven't looked at it recently, but they had over 1.5 million books being published.
Wow.
So, you know, they want people to be putting up books that are worth more than 99 cents.
Right.
At $2.99, the author starts getting 70%.
Wow.
That's a big jump.
Yeah.
And then it alters from there, but right now, the authors can make 70% on a $2.99 book, which in Kindle form. They also offer you the opportunity to print your book as a paperback. And the quality is exactly like what you would get from a traditional publisher.
And you can print just a few at a time if you want.
You can print them. You can not print them. You can just say they're available as paperback. And if a reader wants them, they can order them as paperback.
Oh,
just
cool.
Like they would any other Amazon book that was, you know, because the traditional publishers still make the books available through Amazon.
Right.
So, you know, my book can be sitting right next to Nora Roberts' book and be ordered on Amazon.
Right.
So, you know, I've got access to the same distribution mechanism now with to some extent, the exception of the bookstores, except that I can access the bookstores. There are now ways I can do it, and Amazon offers them to me.
Like what? How?
The latest, and I haven't tried it, so I can't speak with any real strong knowledge of it, but they're offering a service now that will allow me to access the libraries and the booksellers.
Wow.
And I, as I say, I just noticed it a couple of days ago, so I will be looking into it, I can assure you.
Yeah.
But it's getting so that the margin of what the traditional booksellers are offering has become so small.
Yeah.
And yet, they are really still not offering much more in the way of royalties. I have heard that I think they're now offering you 30%.
Oh, really?
But they're not, in my humble opinion, still giving you that much in return
right
for the 70% they're taking.
Well, and the irony is that talking to major publishers now, they basically say, we don't want to take you on as an author unless you already have a big fan base.
So well, I've done all the work.
Right. So what do I need them for?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Now, that being said, and you and I had a bit of an earlier conversation about this, authors traditionally haven't had to do the business end of the book process, the book selling process. So that is, they would write their book. If their book was, the manuscript was accepted by their agent and editor, it went into the big publishing house and then they had to do some appearances or book signings, but that was about it.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, they had no way of knowing how much, if anything, was sold. They were never even given reports on volume sold, how many came back. they had to trust in a very paternalistic model mm-hmm. how many sold and that the royalty check they got was in fact accurate.
Yeah.
They were never allowed to question it. Mm-hmm. Now the books are still published that way with the traditional publishers. They still can't get the volume reports. Mm-hmm. They still get the royalty checks anywhere from some will give you four checks a year. A lot will still only give you one a year. So you're waiting a long time to get your royalties. Mm-hmm. And a lot of those checks are pretty small. By comparison, I can publish my book on Amazon at get it published right away, as opposed to my manuscript can sit with an editor at one of the major mm-hmm. publishing houses for a year and then be rejected.
Yeah.
So I've lost a year's worth of sales.
That was one of the other things that drove me crazy about that business was you were only supposed to submit to one at a time, but they'd take months to get back to you.
So you've got some very well-known publishing houses now trying to get their authors to lock into 8-book deals. Well, the authors don't want that kind of a lock-in, especially because the industry is very volatile, shall we say, right now.
Yeah.
And nobody really knows where it's going. Mm. So would you want to lock into a contract that could be very not beneficial to you for 8 books?
Yeah.
You know, if you only write, say, 2 books a year.
Right.
That's 4 years. Yeah. 4 years can be an eternity in this kind of a market. You know, but that said, the author who is going the other route, not using these publishing houses, suddenly has to find a way to do the business end, mm-hmm. the production, the distribution, and all the marketing.
Right. So, Brenda, you have already experienced some success then, I would say both as a writer and as a marketer. You've done some interesting things with playing with marketing of books. And before we get into the whole Amazon story, I'd like to talk a little bit, I think it was the Stories of Chance Romance, where you partnered with a nonprofit organization as a way of extending your market reach, really.
Can it was certainly one element of it. There was the personal side, and there was the marketing side. On the personal side, a friend of mine, and you knew her too, passed away from breast cancer. And at the same time, a close author friend of mine survived breast cancer, and I felt helpless. And of course, I had next to no money because at that point I was a poor writer, and yet I wanted to do something. You know, I just felt helpless. I had to do something. And all I had was my skill as a writer. And in talking to the friend who had survived, we decided we would put together a book. And now that we have the ability, we thought, you know, we could publish the book and donate the proceeds. My thought was, you know, it's going to carry more weight. Lots of the authors were doing this sort of thing, partnering on various things or donating things, but it was sort of a one-off. Mm-hmm. And I felt, partially because this had hit me so close to home, I felt it was something that I wanted to do for the long haul, do something that it was more of a commitment. Mm-hmm. And I contacted the Canadian Breast Cancer Foundation, and, you know, we did have to go through a few hoops, but having come at it as a business proposition, I was able to write up a business proposal on how this would work, and I actually corrected their legal agreement. You know, I'm a detail-oriented person that way.
Right.
But the way their normal partnership agreement with corporations goes, it's only a 7-year agreement. And, of course, copyright goes on a lot longer than that. Mm-hmm. So I corrected it because our intention was that this book, if you publish in the traditional marketplace, if it doesn't sell in the first month, it's off the shelves. Mm-hmm. If you publish on Amazon, it's there until you take it down.
Right.
So I thought, this is going to be there as long as we leave it there. So it can constantly generate, even if it's a few pennies per copy, over years, it can make money for the Canadian Breast Cancer Foundation. So when I explained this to them, they, of course, had no concept of this. And I said, well, you know, I think this Pink Publications was kind of what I kept referring to it as. I think this can really work. So I designed the cover myself. I have a little pink ribbon hanging off the sea of Chance in the Chance Romance title.
Yeah.
I got a girlfriend to give me some of her short stories. I had some of my own. And you didn't even know this, Timma. I very recently have another author who has survived breast cancer, just donated 4 more stories.
Wow.
So I think I'm either going to set it out as a 2-volume set now, mm-hmm. or I will revise the book so that it's a bigger book and I can charge more. And, you know, again, I've signed over the copyright.
So all the copyright and all the profits.
All of the author profits go every year. We meet with the representative from the Western region of the Canadian Breast Cancer Foundation. We have lunch and coffee, and we present a check to her of the author profits. And it just makes us both feel like we are doing something. It's been amazing the support we've been getting. There's a major advertising site that has a lot of, I think they have, I can't even remember now, I think it's 20,000 followers. It's called BookBud. And everybody is dying to get on BookBud, but they have rules and you have to have a certain number of copies. And it's tricky and it's very popular. Everybody wants to get their book on it. They give it to us for free. Hmm. Every October, which is Breast Cancer Awareness Month, they advertise our Stories of Chance Romance for free.
Wow.
And we sell over 100 copies in that day.
Yeah.
You know, they've got that kind of power.
Wow.
And of course, it goes to breast cancer research.
Of course. And so did the foundation also send out any mailing or information to their
They haven't list? Really been able to get their marketing effort around it. I think what they need us to do is step them through it.
Okay.
They really have relied on us.
Okay.
What I want to do this year, because of course, October is fast approaching. I'm going to make it available in paperback, mm-hmm. and Roxy Burrows and I are going to donate paperbacks.
Okay.
And I think they really haven't embraced the digital age.
Right.
They just don't know what to do with what we're offering.
Okay.
And then I think they're really anxious to work with those paperback copies. And then we'll, you know, ease them into the digital age. But it's just been a very exciting opportunity. And I think it does give us profile for sure.
Yeah.
And at the same time, we just feel we're doing something that's very worthwhile.
Yeah, absolutely.
With something we know how to do.
Yeah. Now, I remember another thing that you had, I believe, done at one point fairly early in your experimenting with this was you had made an arrangement with a well-known author.
Gemma Halliday.
Yeah, tell us about what that was, because I thought, again, that was very clever marketing on your part.
What many of the authors have tried is something called a street team. So I think this works in normal marketing, mm-hmm. that they create a group of very loyal product users.
Mm-hmm.
So in our case, the product is books, or the brand of the author. So if an author has a following of, say, 500 people who are avid readers of her stories or her books, then she creates them into a street team. And she gives them special insights into what's coming up. She may let them name a character. She may give them prizes. She just makes that group very special.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, they spread the word about the new book. And, you know, they can tweet about it. They can post on their own websites. They just spread the word that the new book is coming out, and they generate excitement about that book.
Right.
So it's a, you know, mutually beneficial relationship.
Yeah.
And readers can do that better than anybody else.
Of course.
And these are people who genuinely love that author's work.
Right.
So they're called street teams. The problem is you can only come up with so many things to give that street team. And with Gemma's work, it was very similar to a book that I had out at the time. And this is when I said I have a one with magic in it.
Yeah.
And it's called Witch in the Wind. And it's at its core, it's a mystery. But it's about a woman or a young woman who her parents are murdered. And she has no idea why. And basically finds, once the parents are murdered, that she starts developing some paranormal powers. I weave it all together. But anyway, Gemma also writes paranormal romance. And I thought, you know, that's a nice match. If her readers like her work, they might also like mine. So I donated to Gemma's street team copies of my book.
Right. And it was electronic copies. It was
electronic.
It cost you nothing.
It's a gift. So right. I gift it to her. It gives her something new she can give to her street team to reward them, at the same time that it gives me access to a whole new audience.
I thought that was so brilliant. I mean, talk about a win-win.
Well, that's what I thought,
yeah.
You know, and she was wonderful. She loved to have it. And I you know, because I'm a little arty on the side as well. So I did it up in a nice little coupon that she could you know, distribute with nice colors and a copy of my cover. And, you know, you want something tangible,
right?
Not just saying, and with this, you get a free copy. So I made something tangible she could put in as a certificate that they could redeem.
Right.
So, you know, we worked through that really nicely. And I think it worked really well for both of us. And, you know, I, from time to time, still in contact with her.
Cool.
So that worked really well.
And the thing is, that's a concept that any business person can apply. Look for who has a complementary kind of audience to yours, and what can you offer them that will help them at the same time as giving you exposure to their audience.
Exactly. So it's market research, and then who's your target audience, and what's the profile of that audience? And, you know, what I've discovered was certainly it's hard to get information about reader profiles for anything other than romance. The romance marketplace is so well studied. We know exactly what their education level is, and it's, you know, it's college, it's university level. They are people that don't have a lot of time to read, but love to read. So the age is nailed down. They know, we know what their education level is. We know they're women. We know they're university or college educated. We know that they have money. They're professional women. We know that they want happily ever after. They basically want adult fairy tales.
Right.
They want a woman they can identify with and a man they can love. Who doesn't want that? Yes, our husbands.
Count me in.
You know, but that's it. Yes, we're married. And, you know, you probably couldn't live with this guy if he was real, but who doesn't want a fantasy life? Yeah. You know? So, you know, you can go through all of that. But at the end of the day, it's been studied to death. It's the it's a huge portion of the buying book buying public. Is romance readers. Yeah. Women buy a huge proportion of books relative to men. I think men buy like one a year. Women buy one a week. I wish I had more of the statistics to give you, but it's amazing.
Right.
And so that is a huge market. Yeah. So if you're a writer and you're writing to that market, you're already way ahead.
Yeah.
And then if you can really focus on, so what are they likely to be interested in? As I found out personally, breast cancer is a huge issue to women of my age, professional women. We're all losing friends or, you know, helping friends go through breast cancer.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was almost by accident I stumbled on that, that it's something I could do and ease their burden. And our stories, there's only one story that we'll have, by the time I add the new four in it, it will have, I think 16 or 17 stories. There's only one that actually has breast cancer in it, and it's still cute. You know, these are, and they were so vetted by the community, which is where my business background came in. I knew she could not accept anything that had anything other than a chaste kiss in it. No dirty words whatsoever. A nun could read this. My mother read this, and she's the next best thing. You know my mother. So, you know, squeaky clean stories of cute meets, and it covers every age group. Up to, we have one in a retirement home.
Hey, it happens.
It happens, you know. So these are stories that are going to be identified by with the same women who are going through breast cancer.
Yeah.
And they need a bit of hope and light reading at a time like this. They don't want to read a really sad, draining story at that time.
Yeah.
So it's a perfect matching of the market profile that you're trying to reach.
So let's talk about your sales. So your book is selling pretty well on Amazon. First of all, what's the book?
Oh, the book is, actually, I was fortunate in partnering with two other writers. C.J. Carmichael is a prolifically published Harlequin author. She wrote Super Romance and a few mysteries, has almost 40 published books.
Wow.
And she was ready to try indie publishing. So she wanted to write a book, and another more published author than me, but still on the digital plane, was Roxy Burrows. And what we wrote was a Christmas trilogy with each one is a single story, so a romance, with a linking mystery. And, of course, Christmas, you don't want dead bodies. They made me promise I wouldn't put a dead body in, but I still wanted the puzzle. So I was allowed the puzzle as long as I didn't kill anybody off. And we put, so we had a baby abandoned in the Christmas nativity scene of a town.
How appropriate. Baby in a manger.
Baby in a manger. How more appropriate can you get?
Yeah.
And it was really successful. So, you know, I can't talk to their rankings, but they stayed ranking as well as I did. And I know mine hit number 11 in the Cozy Mysteries of all the books sold by Amazon.
That's awesome. And so, that was really your first published book, really.
Yeah, that's the first book I ever even got as far as revising. So I was luckier than most. Yeah. But, you know, I put it down to having some knowledge of the business aspects.
Yeah.
You know, it was, I'll
put a link to the book in the show notes as well if anyone wants to pick it up and read it. And what's interesting is you were saying that even though it's a Christmas story, here we are right now, it's the end of May, and it's still selling hundreds every month.
It's still selling. I've been astounded. Yeah. And actually, it's what I'm getting in the reviews. It's a great story for any time of year.
Yeah.
And again, I went through convent school, gotta tell you. I can't write the steamy ones that others do. If you want steamy, I can give you names of authors. It just, I can't. My mother's still alive and she read this one. And, you know, I just don't want to give her a heart attack. So this one, again, I've gotten comments in my reviews that they really enjoy that they could read a romance and a mystery. They're combined and still there's no sex in it. So, you know, if you're looking for steam, it's not in there, but it is a fairly complicated, cozy mystery. No dead body. And of course, it's Christmas, so it is a happily ever after.
And yet, you left it open so that you can do a subsequent novel based on these things.
I am about to start it.
Let's talk a little bit about the business of publishing on Amazon. I mean, one of the things that certainly that I've noticed is frustration when people call things a book and they're not really. And you commented that Amazon is cracking down on that a little bit. Mm-hmm. So for a while, even 6 months ago, I know a lot of the internet marketing gurus were all saying, oh yeah, just throw stuff up on Amazon and, you know, publish on Kindle and you can build your audience that way. You give it away for free. Amazon has stopped allowing that, I gather.
It's not to their advantage either to have books that don't meet any of the standards, whatever those standards may be. So that could be, is it a book or not? Mm-hmm. Is it properly edited or not?
Right.
You know, so the main way to find that out is look at the reviews. Mm-hmm. There are reviews on Amazon itself that will tell you whether or not it's been well received. So if you look at it and there are no reviews, that's not a good sign.
So then, but if you're just publishing, how do you get reviews before you've published?
Again, that's part of what we do on the business side. What I was able to do, and this is what traditional publishers have done for years, mm-hmm. is you can send out advanced copies to reviewers. Now you don't pay for them. I went through to see where there were similar books, mm-hmm. who had reviewed them and enjoyed them. And I contacted those people saying, you Brilliant. Seem to have enjoyed that. I have written this book. I think you might enjoy mine. Would you be interested in giving me an honest review? I'd be happy to send you a copy.
What a brilliant idea. And so what kind of reactions did you get?
I did not get a single refusal.
Wow.
Now, you know, I did get one or two who didn't follow through.
Right.
What I discovered is I had left it a little late because, of course, I was writing it up until the last minute, too. So time management is a big issue for new authors. What I've discovered, too, is I was a little disappointed that I thought some of them hadn't done it.
Yeah.
And had time. So I was still getting reviews coming up in February and in March that they would say at the end, I was given an advanced copy because mm-hmm. they're called ARCs. You know, this has been done in traditional publishing for years.
Right.
But they did follow through. It just took longer for them to do it. So you can contact people. Like others,
I love that idea of, you know, thinking about, instead of just saying, okay, well, who are the big name people who've written in this field, thinking, who's their audience?
Yeah.
And then going to fans who, you know, are likely to appreciate your type of writing.
Because nobody can write books fast enough for an avid reader.
Yeah.
So I'm not stealing a reader from them.
Right.
They can't write a book, you know, like I know myself, I love to read. And I'm not a fast reader, mm-hmm. but I can read an average-sized commercial book. I can probably read it in 2 days. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, not sitting there morning to night.
Yeah.
I can read them in about 4 hours. I know people who can read them in two. You know, so if you're reading a book, even if you read a book a week, and there's people that read a lot more than that, there's nobody who can write that fast. So they can have a lot of favorite authors. So why shouldn't I be one of them? And, you know, if I, and I will pass on, I'm happy if somebody has liked my book and there's another author out there who writes a similar book. I'm happy for that because she might find some of her readers who might then find me. And I'm happy to recommend them. You know, so I'll often, another way that I like to try to get my name out, and it worked well in my very first book. I got, I sold 200 of my very first book out, totally unknown. I did a little, what they call a blog tour. It's a virtual road trip. And I went to websites that had authors of similar books or reviewed similar books. And I, they'd ask me to do a post, and I would go to each one. The mistake some of the authors made is they just automatically wrote the same post for each one. Well, that's not fair to the followers. So I went to each one in advance, found out what their flavor was. And then I would write a post that leaned towards that flavor. So mine, as I said, was about, you know, a set of parents were murdered. Why were they murdered? And then, you know, the magic starts showing up in this daughter. Why was that? And then, you know, a warlock shows up and all of the rest of it. Well, one of the sites I was sent to, she may review paranormal romance, but all around her site were various Humane Society icons. So there was no doubt in my mind that she was a lot more interested in the familiar dog. So I wrote my entire post.
So one of the characters in the book
was a dog. So, you know, don't spend a lot of time on the hero, the heroine, the dead parents. Write about the dog. So how did he come to be in it? Why did I make him an important character? You know, how did he talk in their head? So I wrote the entire post on that. It was one of my most successful posts. I'm sure it generated readership.
So cool.
You know, so you have to be always thinking. But again, I had to be aware that she had an audience. What was the profile of that target audience? If I hadn't had the business background with the marketing, I wouldn't have seen that. And a lot of the other authors didn't realize that's what happened. They thought I wrote great posts. They didn't know why. It's
understanding
really
your target market.
And it's again, very
that,
difficult
that
for
approach.
Them.
I mean, we hear a lot now in the marketing world about growing your audience through guest blogging.
But what does it mean?
It
doesn't mean just write it. It's not enough to keep going on all these sites saying, buy my book, buy my book, buy my book. You have to give them something for it. They want to know what's in it for me. A book is just a product. So if I'm on a post or I'm anywhere doing my advertising and my promotion, what's in it for them? And I take time to think of that. And I look at the site well in advance, and then I try and figure it out. I did another guest blog for Lisa Mondello. She's New York Times bestselling author. And I was on it this Christmas with the Christmas book. I was so nervous. And
now, how did you get on there?
That one, that was through networking. Another business skill. It was networking through, it's called the Independent Author Network. And, of course, everybody's blogging these days. It's really hard to get content. And she was looking for people through the very quiet Christmas month, desperate for people to want to blog in December when most of the authors are really busy doing their family things. And she wanted content for Christmas that had some sort of Christmas flavor. I'm thinking, pick me, Christmas book. So I contacted her virtual assistant and said, you know, I'm part of a three-book, a three-author trilogy. I think it was Roxy actually saw the first opportunity, and we ended up getting with Lisa, I think all three of us, three separate times a week apart. Talk about, you know, for profile for the series. And that was in December.
Well, and it's interesting because doing it with two other authors and having a package series, I mean, there are pros and cons to that. The pro, obviously, is you can multiply the marketing impact. Because each of you has your own followers now. And you can reach them. There are also, of course, tensions when you're trying to
agree on things.
Especially a mystery when it's being written in three separate parts.
It had its challenges, I will say. My other big learning of all of this is you can outsource. So you can outsource the production, various aspects of the production, which I'm now doing. I'm too busy writing to actually do all the production anymore.
Okay.
I'm glad I know all the aspects so that I can evaluate the skill level.
Right.
Because like anything else, all of a sudden when something is really lucrative, there's everybody popping up on the internet saying, I can do design a cover.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, they are self-taught on how to do Photoshop and it's not very good.
Yeah, it's like all the basement websites that have been done with the flashing animated characters.
Oh, exactly. So you want to know, you want to be able to evaluate whether somebody really can do the work for you.
Yeah.
So I'm glad I have that, but I'm outsourcing now the formatting, the editing, the proofing, which terribly important to do, you know, proof, edit, all of those things.
Yeah, you were saying the one low review on your book was somebody complaining about typos, which have since been fixed.
Oh, absolutely.
Which is another great thing about publishing electronically.
Oh, yes.
You can go in and fix those things.
Yes, and I did as soon as I possibly could. And it was really a function of time. I ran, because of us trying to write them all at the same time, I just couldn't, it had to go up. You know, like a deadline is still a deadline, even in the virtual world.
Yeah.
A deadline is a deadline, and I had to put it up.
Yeah.
And I, you know, it killed me to do it knowing I just didn't feel confident in the proofing.
Yeah.
And there was no time to get it proofed, professionally proofed.
Right.
I couldn't get anybody available.
Yeah.
But the what I did immediately was get that. I didn't consider it, oh, it's up now, move on.
No.
I couldn't do that.
No.
I owed it to the readers to get that professional proofing done as soon as I possibly could. And then replace the content.
Yeah.
And another really nice thing about Amazon is I've made a couple of other changes and I'm bringing out the paperback. And I'm able to now say I have significant enough changes. They won't do it just because of typos.
Right.
Or I would have done it by now. But I've now made what they would consider significant enough changes that they will put an announcement out that will tell everybody who has bought that book that there is a new
version
of it, and they can re-upload the clean version.
Okay.
So even the people that have already bought it.
So it reminds them of your existence.
Exactly.
Great.
And means that they can replace the one that had the typos in it. So, you know, I feel better about that.
Yes.
And from now on, I know I'm better able to understand how long does the production take?
Yeah.
How long do you have lead time to get it to an independent editor, that there's a line editor and then there's a proofer. I thought they were the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, so it's all learnings.
Sure.
So, you know, I feel better now knowing that that book is pristine and I can be proud of it. And it's now going to be a published paperback as well.
Now, in Amazon as well, I think my understanding is it's kind of like with podcasts, there's a period when, say, on iTunes, they'll list new and notable. So if you've put out a new podcast and you've managed to build momentum before it goes up so that immediately a lot of people download it, you're likely to get the new notable, which of course then has a spin-off effect of a lot of people becoming aware of you, which will get you more listeners. Yeah. Amazon does something similar.
They have an algorithm that runs under the covers. And that algorithm, it's based on all kinds of factors. So it's how many reviews you get, how many clicks you have, how many people buy it, obviously. But it's not just sales. It's so many other factors. And that's what drives it up in the rankings, which drives it onto the new and notable. So they're all interrelated.
Yeah.
And again, that will tell them whether they can check to make sure that the reviews are all legitimate. So they will have verified as an Amazon purchaser.
Does that verify that they bought that particular book or just that they buy stuff from
it? No, that particular book was a reader who actually purchased it.
Okay.
So you can't flood, you know, you can't send out all your PDF copies and get them to all write reviews and then dump 200 reviews on the system.
Right. This explains to me, though, why, because I've noticed that some of the big name writers in my industry, they will have a deal where you go, you buy an advanced copy on Amazon, then they'll send you the proof so that you can read it and have the review ready to roll.
Yeah.
But that way it's verified that you bought it through Amazon so that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because otherwise it doesn't count.
Okay.
So yeah, it needs to be a verified purchase.
Okay.
Yeah, because otherwise they are afraid that people will just get, you know, send copies to all of their friends.
Yeah.
Amazon is really trying to maintain the quality of those indicators because readers are relying on it.
Yeah.
So you're not fooling anybody.
Yeah.
You know, if you've got 10 5-star reviews and they were all your friends, what's it buying you if then a reader uses those reviews to make the buying decision, and they hate it. You know, it's not fair to the reader. They're not going to buy more of your books. Mm-hmm. I would rather make it clear who will enjoy my book, what kind of reader will enjoy that book, mm-hmm. and then have more of those readers buy it.
Yeah.
As opposed to having somebody who reads literary fiction buying my cozy mystery and saying, well, I hated this.
Right.
Because I don't like cozy mystery. And you're thinking, well, why did you buy it? Yes. Well, because, you know, I had five people who read literary fiction say they loved it.
Right.
You know, it's misleading.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's in marketing, it's really important to send both the silent subliminal messages that are clear and accurate, as well as the overt messages mm-hmm. that signal this is a cozy mystery.
Yeah.
This is the audience it's supposed to attract.
Right. Anything else you'd like to add or topics that I should have touched on and haven't?
Pricing.
Okay, let's talk about pricing.
Pricing is right now the most challenging and volatile aspect of digital publishing. I think I mentioned to you, we got caught.
Tell us how.
When we were writing our trilogy, the normal price for books of that size, and, you know, it took us time to write it and do the research and all of the rest of it, they should have sold for $2.99. And right as we were ready to release them, suddenly, a lot of the really well-known authors decided that they were going to put out a Christmas book as a loss leader.
Mm-hmm.
And they put them out for 99 cents.
Ouch.
And there was nothing we could do about it. And you have to, you know, we know, and I know as a business person, you can't put your price way above your competition.
Right.
So we suddenly had to drop our product price by $2. And the authors who didn't know to match their price to their competition didn't sell.
Right.
And we sold, but of course that knocked us out of our 70% royalty range.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's our income.
Yeah.
We were clobbered.
Oh.
Our income took a terrible hit.
Do you, as an author, have access to any information about the people who've purchased your books?
No. Okay. No, I do get very immediate, I get almost real time how many books are sold. I can see where they're sold. I was really excited that I actually sold a book in India. I was so excited. Mm-hmm. I can tell that most of my books are sold, of course, in North America, the U.S. being predominant. But I also sell well in the U.K. and Australia. So, you know, we can get that kind of information. We don't get a lot on the market profile. Mm-hmm. I'm hoping eventually we will. We can get some of that information off Facebook, right? Yeah. Up until now, we've had more success with the marketing, like the Frost Family series, the Frost Family and Friends Christmas series. We had a lot of success, I think, supporting our sales through the promotions on Facebook.
Okay.
And through that, we got a better sense of, because, of course, they have more profile information.
Yeah.
And we got a better sense of what the age was that was reading our book and some of their interests mm-hmm. and those sorts of things.
One of the other interesting things that you've done from a marketing perspective is you also enjoy designing jewelry. And mm-hmm. so you're incorporating that into the marketing. Can you talk a bit about that?
I do love making jewelry. It's my R&R activity. And one of the things we do, which is often a marketing strategy, is to do contests. Mm-hmm. Well, if you have a contest, you need to have a prize mm-hmm. or something to award them with. And of course, we don't have a lot of money. We're writers. And so I thought, well, you know, I could make some jewelry. And so what I ended up doing was designing what I'm now calling the Frosty Collection. And I design a unique piece of jewelry for each special thing. So there was one for the launch of my book, was the necklace. And I have one now, actually, there's only about 2 days left to bid on it for the Brenda Novak, who's a suspense thriller writer. And she has an online auction going on to support diabetes research. Okay. And I have a bracelet that is a Frosty bracelet. And it's pearl and sterling silver. And our anthology of the Christmas trilogy that they can bid on. And I'm planning to do just one of unique pieces of jewelry, good quality, you know, mm-hmm. sterling silver, Swarovski crystal, pearls, you know, those sorts of things as a prize. And I think, you know, this is the only place readers will be able to get them.
Yes.
And they're unique and they've been very popular. And I enjoy doing them.
Yeah.
And each one has a sterling silver charm of a snowflake, which is sort of the emblem of the Frost family and Friends series.
Cool.
So it's sort of a special thing for our readers and followers.
Very nice. Well, I wish you continued success. And
Thank you. It's fun
to learn, as you're learning, more about how the publishing world is changing and how Amazon is changing things. So thank you very much for being on the show, Brenda.
Well, thank you for having me. I've enjoyed it.
I'm going to be giving a talk to a bunch of senior executives participating in an executive education program at the University of Alberta next week. And we'll be talking about trends in the digital marketing world. So I've been thinking a lot about trends, and one of the ones that I have noticed is increasingly there is a blending of the virtual world and the real world. And so I thought it was kind of cool when towards the end of the interview, Brenda mentioned the Frosty Jewelry Collection, how they're starting to create something real and physical, custom-made jewelry, that they're using as incentives and rewards for readers who are fans of the Frost Family series. I think they're totally on trend there. You might want to give some thought to how you could offer something in the physical world to reward your online fans, or vice versa. If you've got some ideas on it, why don't you head on over to frankonlinemarketing.com and comment on the blog post that goes with this podcast and share ideas that you've tried out or things that you're thinking about trying out. Or if you're having trouble thinking of ways that you could do it, why don't you tell us a bit about what you sell, and the Frank Online Marketing Show community can help you come up with some ideas. As always, I'd also really value it if you tell others about the podcast and be so generous as to go and leave a review on iTunes so that we can help more businesses learn how to take advantage of the internet to grow their profits. That's all for this week. I'll talk with you again next Friday. Bye.